We're taking podcasting to a whole new level. New video podcasts are available now. Download video podcasts from PTI, Around the Horn, and Mike and Mike. From PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
All right, an action-packed BS report for you today. We got Mike Lombardi from the National Football Post. We got Cousin Sal with the Week 7 Lions. And then, at the end of all of it, my old buddy Jacko to discuss the baseball playoffs, Mad Men, maybe even The Island on MTV. One thing I wanted to mention, and I have been forgetting to mention this over and over again for the past few weeks, you can hear the BS report on XM Radio. If you have XM Radio, they run it on Fridays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time and then 10 p.m. Friday night, and it's channel 141. Is that correct, Joe Mead?
That is correct.
Channel 141. So, you know, if you're leaving a little early on a Friday, maybe you pop us on. Can hear me in the car, hear my nasally voice as you're driving in stereo and your Alpine radio. I think that'd be fantastic. And eventually when XM and Sirius merge, we'll be on Sirius too. So I kept forgetting to mention that, but there you go. All right, week 7 of the NFL coming up. We're going to go to our NFL insider from the National Football Post. Made an appearance on Inside the NFL last week. Former Raiders GM Mike Lombardi. Mike, how you doing?
I'm great, Bill. How are you?
Do you like having the term former Raiders GM in your intro, or should I give another team?
I'm proud of the Raiders. I have a great fondness for the Hotel California. there's a particular, there's some bitter times, but no, I like the Raiders. I'm always proud to be there.
You became part of the bizarre press conference story 2 weeks ago, and you were accused of what was the accusation exactly, that you pimped? You told Belichick that Randy Moss still had a good, still could be salvaged or something. Like you wouldn't have told him that.
Yeah, he could still run. As I talked about on Showtime on Inside the NFL, you know, it's like it was bizarro world. It was like Rod Sterling was coming into the Twilight Zone. Why wouldn't I tell him he could still run?
Yeah, you're trying to trade him.
I don't know. You know, he gets out there at those press conferences. And remember, there's two kind of law. There's Al Davis law, and then there's the other kind of law we live at in this country. So,
right.
In that world, I guess I violated something. I don't know.
Well, it's too bad because you guys love to hang out and you went to movies together all the time.
Yeah.
I know you lost a friend over this.
it hurts me because, Bill, you know, growing up, I studied Al Davis. I learned about football through him. I learned a lot of football for Raiders, you know, and it's funny because he just, you know, in the last couple of years, it was just hard. You know, obviously the shell year was tough for me. And then the last year was very tough. So, you know, you live and learn. The first 6 years were good. I move on, and I'm a better person for it.
The shell year was tough for you, and I'd use another word for me, lucrative. I love the Art Shell era.
I just found out that Jason Whitlock thought I was supplying you with material.
Yeah, I did.
Art
Shell supplied me with his own material during his last coaching stint. And
I was honored that Whitlock thought I was that creative. I mean, it was funny when you would write on Friday and I was on the team plane and I was reading your diatribe on Art's show. I would have to hide the column from anybody to see if I was reading. And then I'd pass it around the back of the plane to make sure everybody else read it.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Art for the new laptop I bought at the end of the 2005 or 2006 season. I can't remember. Hey, who is the best team in the NFL right now?
I got to think it's the Tennessee Titans. I mean, you know, even though they look the ugliest at times, they probably are the hardest to beat. You know, the Giants eventually, you had to think, the lack of pass rush, they could only scheme so much.
Yeah.
You know, and Derek Anderson finally hit some long balls. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, I keep telling everybody I write about it on the Post, he's like Dave Kingman. He's either going to hit a home run or he's going to strike out, and he'd been striking out a bunch.
Yeah.
But last night when he hit those couple deep passes, it made life, you know, they got their offense back. So, I think the Titans are, Bill. I think they're probably the hardest team to beat because they play a style of defense that you better really be good to block them.
Well, sometimes, actually, oftentimes with the NFL, and I always write this, it comes down to which team does the best one thing the best. Which team has the best thing? And it doesn't matter what that thing is. Like, even when the Ravens won the Super Bowl that year, they just played defense better than anybody did anything else. So this year, it seems like maybe Tennessee might be the best team because they play defense better than anybody does anything else. Would you agree?
I agree, and they can turn the ball over, and they can score on defense. I mean, they're like the Ravens were back in 2000. They're an offensive defense. I mean, they just don't play good in the red area. And then the other thing is they bloody your nose when you're done playing them. I mean, when you're done playing Tennessee, you've been beaten up, and they can play any style of defense. If you want to play man-to-man, they can do that. If you want to play a lot of zone, they can count. I mean, they miss very few tackles, and all the good tackling teams are always the best defensive team. So, I think that they're hard to play, and I think they know who they are on offense now. They make no illusions. You know, when you put Kerry Collins back there, you know who you are, and you don't try to be Superman. You just try to get first downs and try to keep him from making the big mistakes.
You and I were both very early on the Tennessee bandwagon. In fact, we might be sitting together in the front seat. But my one question with them was, what happens on the road against a good defense if Collins has to make some plays for them to win? And he actually answered that question in the Baltimore game. He made some plays and he won the game for him, which I still don't know if he can do that every game, but at least that made me feel a little better about them.
And then, well, the one thing about him is he doesn't have to pitch the whole, you know, he's like a middle reliever, Kerry. He only has to play good in a couple innings because
right.
The defense is going to play good. I mean, you know, when you're Denver and you don't score and you punt the ball back, that's like a turnover because Denver's defense is going to give up a points. But
yeah.
With Tennessee, they'll keep the game close. The game never gets away from them. So, Kerry, like, the last two drives of that game, I think, is where they got all the offense in Tennessee. He took them 80 yards for the touchdown. The drive before that, I think he went 60 for the field goal.
Why can't they, you know, the trading deadline's coming up. Why wouldn't Tennessee get a receiver? I mean, why doesn't the NFL work that way?
Yeah, you know, because it's so hard to teach a guy to come in, and it's not like baseball where you can bring a guy in and he knows what to do. He has any rhythm. I mean, look, the Jacksonville Jaguars signed Jerry Porter this offseason, and he still hasn't caught a ball yet.
Right.
I mean, it's hard to integrate players into your system that haven't been there. It's difficult. It's not like baseball where you can just get the guy some reps and let him go and see what he can do. So it's a lot more difficult than that.
So you're saying if Tennessee said to Detroit, hey, we'll give you a second rounder for Roy Williams, and if we make the Super Bowl, it turns into a first rounder, and they just rolled the dice with Williams and hope that within like 4 or 5 weeks he could get acclimated to that offense and make some plays. You're saying he couldn't?
It'd be really difficult for him, and they would take too big of a risk, and nobody wants to pay. That's, you know, with Roy being a free agent at the end of the year, you know, they got Albert Haynesworth, who they certainly should franchise. Now, he's got lucrative things in his contract to keep it, but then they would give up a second or a first-round pick for a player that ultimately they couldn't keep because they couldn't franchise him.
Yeah, but, I understand the first-round pick. Well, you always make a good point. Second-round picks are the best round because it's so cost-effective, all that stuff. But
they're gold. I mean, I'd rather give you my one than I'd give you my two.
I still think, though, if you're that close to winning a Super Bowl, don't you have to make, like, those one or two moves to try to push yourself over the top? I don't understand why these teams get close and then they're like, well, I don't want to give up my number two. Like, who cares?
Yeah, well, I don't disagree, but I think what happens is now, you know, we only have Tennessee's played 5 games. If they made the trade today, Roy Williams would only be available for 11 games. You know, I don't know if he could impact their team as much as they could. And I think that's really the issue. And I think that's what happens. You know, for the short term, it looks good on paper, but it's hard to get him integrated into the system.
Well, what about if Philly traded for Tony Gonzalez? Like, is it easier if it's a tight end or no?
You know, Philly could trade for Tony Gonzalez and he could adapt. I mean, they would have to, he could fit in fairly well. You know, it's not Philly's style to do that. He fits their tight ends. Philly likes tight ends that can't block. I mean, I think that's one of the requirements in the Andy Reid offense.
Yeah.
If you're a tight end, you cannot block. I mean, so, you know, and I think that they've got a bunch of guys that can catch balls. They just don't have anybody that can block at Philly.
If you had to pick a team, and I know this will change every 3 weeks and it's almost done to do, but if you had to pick a team in the NFC that you think will be playing the Titans in the Super Bowl, who would it be?
You know, earlier on, I would have said I thought I liked Philly, but the more I watch Philly, the less I like Philadelphia.
Me too.
You know, I just think Philly has, I mean, they struggle with that San Francisco game. I'm still going to say the Giants because I think at the end of the day, the Giants can control the ball with their offensive line and with their offense. I think they're still really good. I think it'll be the Giants, although the Giants are a team that, you know, had they made the Jason Taylor trade before they lost Jose Urmonora, they probably would easily have been the team to make.
And there's nobody that they can get?
Nobody of any magnitude that's going to give them rush, and I think that that's the biggest problem. They can't generate any pass rush, and I think that hurts them in their scheme. When you can block them, you can throw on them, as witnessed by last night. I mean, hey, we could watch the Super Bowl all over again and make you cry because there's guys screaming down the field wide open. They just couldn't get the ball to them.
You know who's looming for me a little bit, and I'm going to really watch them closer this week because I was wildly impressed by them last week, was the Cardinals. And here's why. Because they have a bunch of skill guys who can do things. You know what I mean? Like
they're good. No, they're
yeah, they're good.
But you watch them at home. You watch them at home, and they look good. And you know, I said this in week three of the season when they went on that vacation on the East Coast. They decided to took the cherry blossoms in Washington. They were, yeah. You know, they go into Washington. I thought they should have beat Washington soundly.
Yeah.
And they couldn't come away with the win. Then they go up and they commit the turnover fest. And every time I look at that glove on Kurt Warner, I can't help but think of Michael Jackson. I mean, gosh, take the glove off and hold the ball. He doesn't hold the ball on the road. So I'm with you. I like Arizona at home. I just don't like them on the road. They, you know, I fell for them 1 week and they just burnt me to death. And that's what they make you worry. And their defense is so sporadic when they have that crowd rush. Now, when you watch that defensive line play against the Dallas Cowboys, that was a dominating performance by defensive line that I've seen all year. They rushed four guys and controlled the line.
Yeah, I really am starting to talk myself into them. Not just because they have guys who can make plays on defense. They have guys who can make plays on special teams. The coach seems pretty solid. You know, like in a league where I think we've seen the most bad coaches maybe of any year, I think he's one of the better decent ones. And then on offense, they have all these guys who can make plays. And that, I really like Hightower. I wonder if by the end of the year.
They should be playing Hightower now, Bill.
Yeah,
Hightower
is
the best back on the team. He's the best back on the team. For some reason, they've tagged him as the short yardage goal line back. And I keep telling my sons to pick him up in fantasy, and they used to keep telling me, Dad, he's not going to play enough. And I keep watching the tape, and I say, this guy's the best. Edgerrin James is, you know, one thing about running backs, they're like NBA small forwards. You know when it's done with them. I mean, you can tell. You know, there's no lift in their game. There's no explosion. That's what scares you about LT right now. Maybe it is the toe, because if it isn't the toe, he doesn't have any burst or explosion. He ain't the same guy. Let's be real honest here. And I think that when you watch Edgerrin James, he's not the same guy. Now, does that mean he can't function? Yeah, he can function, but he can't give you those big plays that you need.
I would call this the Sean Alexander corollary. When it's time, it's time. And, you know, it doesn't matter what the guy's contract is, what he did last year, what he did last week. But you know when he doesn't have it anymore. And I watch Edge, and I just think that guy's been done for 2 years. They can make all the excuses they want. Then you watch Hightower. It's like, man, this guy, what can't he do? So you think he gets in, they get Bolden back in a couple weeks. I'm erring on the side of caution with him coming back because I think that was a bad injury. But all of a sudden you have Breston, who looks like a real player, right?
Right, no doubt. I mean, he's another one I thought they should have picked up in fantasy football, and they left me out of that one. I mean, I've been fired as the GM of my two sons' fantasy team for 3 weeks in a row now. But
and Fitzgerald, Fitzgerald might be – you know, we talk about like the biggest gamer out of all the receivers. He might be the biggest gamer, most competitive guy out of all the guys.
Yeah, I mean, he, you know, when the ball's close, I mean, how's Pac-Man going to ever guard him? I mean, he can't see over him. And, you know, what people don't realize about receivers and about height, it's like quarterbacks see jersey color, and when they see a big guy's jersey, they'll throw it to him. He may not actually have separation, but he's going to throw it to him. And the one thing Fitzgerald does, he comes down with the ball. It's like the alley-oop in basketball.
Yeah.
They just go throw it up there. And I think that that's what happens. And when you get a big, tall guy like that down the field, even though there may not be a lot of separation, it's like an Andre Johnson play. I mean, Mastrov has no business throwing that ball over in a double coverage. No business.
Yeah.
And Andre Johnson just comes down and makes the play. So, you know, I'm with you on Arizona, but you've watched him at home.
Yes.
I'm waiting for him to show me something on the road. If they... You know, this is a really good home team. They were a good home team last year. But they, you know, now they beat San Francisco up in San Francisco. You know, it was an interesting game. They controlled the clock. I think it was week one of the season. But they're going to have to go and beat somebody good on the road for me to jump back on the bandwagon. I was expecting them to be Washington.
I am intrigued by them only because I'm looking at upside at this point with the NFC, because I don't think we can say after 6 weeks, this is who the team is. So it's like, well, who are they going to grow into? And I think with the Redskins kind of are who they are. I have a feel for them. I kind of know what their limitations are. I think the coach is going to kill Dallas. Philly just looks too sloppy to me. The Giants, as you said, the Giants have some issues with the lack of pass rushers. Seems like you can run up on them. You know, I thought Lewis was just pounding them last night. Yeah. You can throw deep on them. And you look at Arizona and think, man, just if you just collect all the good players in that team, seems like they just have a lot of good players. They, you know,
and
maybe because
they fit your formula. I mean, look, Seattle's given up. I mean, it's over.
Yes.
St. Louis might give them a hard game, but St. Louis is going to play hard for a certain period. And then they've got San Francisco. So really, that should be six wins, to which they've now beat Dallas. You know, they've added some other wins.
And they haven't played the Rams yet.
Yeah, haven't played the Rams yet. So they should be able to collect wins along the way. And the NFC West is playing the NFC East. So that, you know, that always makes it a little worrisome. And they play the AFC North. So they've got Baltimore. They still have Cincinnati.
Yeah.
You know, they've got some teams they should be. You know, they got Cleveland again.
Yeah, it seems like they could, as far-fetched as this sounds, seems like they could get potentially to the 2 seed. If they win that division, they just bone up on those easy games and go 11-5 or 12-4. That might be enough to get a bye in week one.
Yeah, I mean, if they don't stub their toe against one of these divisions, you know, they got to play the AFC North, which, you know, let's face it, that's not the most talented division, and they know how to beat Pittsburgh with all those Pittsburgh coaches sitting out there. They beat Pittsburgh last year when Pittsburgh was half decent. So
yeah.
If they can do that, then they can collect some wins. And that's why I thought, I wrote this, I thought if they beat Washington in Washington in week three of the season, they were a playoff team.
Which they almost did. So if you had to pick one team other than the Cards, well, the Cards aren't really a pick at this point, but a team that has underachieved so far, but you think can kind of turn things around and maybe make a playoff run along the lines of maybe Houston, Cleveland, somebody like that, who would you pick?
In the league here?
Yeah, either the conference.
Boy, I'd say that's a hard one because I think we kind of know where everybody is. I think Pittsburgh's the only team, and I don't think they can do this, but Pittsburgh's the only team that I think could get better because if their offensive line shows any improvement, they've got enough defense to be able to get there. And that quarterback's legitimate.
So you don't think like Houston, Cleveland, Miami?
I think at the end of the day, the problems that Houston and Miami have are always going to be there. I mean, Houston looks to me like they can't win on the road. They can't seem to get anything going with their secondary. They have no team speed on defense. They don't make enough plays. They can't really turn the ball over. Miami just doesn't have enough offensive weapons. If they had a couple receivers, I would really root for them. But I think Cleveland emotionally played well last night, but I think they could just bounce right back and go down. I think Pittsburgh to me is the one team, even though they're 4-1, I think they could bounce back. And I mean, they could keep growing if their offensive line gets better.
I think I agree with you. Be kind, but how depressed should I be about the Pats?
Well, I think the Pats are just, I think we have to take our mindset. And I think that Pat game, people talk about, oh, they're the Chargers. Hey, look, if the Pats score at first and goal with a two, that's a game.
I agree.
And there's no margin for error for the Pats, unfortunately, this year because they don't have any way to make it up. So when you have a long foul ball like you did with Randy Moss down the field and you don't hit it, that's a bad thing. You know, when you get the first and goal with the two and you don't score, you can't overcome those things. And I think the Pats' problems are always going to be there. They're going to be a little slow at linebacker. They're not going to be a great space team. We know what they are, but the Pats have a way of fixing the problems week in and week out. Now, there's some other problems come up. It's a little bit like Curly in the boat, you know, where he's got a hole coming in the boat and he decides he's going to drill another hole, let the water out. There's always another problem coming along the way here.
Mm.
But I think that the Pats know who they are and they'll manage it. And, you know, I think like this week they'll play Denver. You know, I think Castle will play much better against Denver. He'll know where he's going with the football. They'll try to run it more. They'll control the clock. I mean, I'm sure his objective is going to be to have ball control 34 minutes, milk the 25-second clock, keep his defense as much off the field. You know, and people have done a good job of neutralizing that defensive line. You know, they've done a good job of neutralizing those good players there, you know, with Ty Warren and Vince Wilfork. They haven't let them dominate the game.
Well, are those players even that good? Did we overrate them?
Well, I think they're good if they can play in the environment. It's a little bit like, you know, if Joe Frazier can box in the middle of the ring, he's good. We're on the ropes, you know, but if he has to dance, he's not. And what people have done to them is make them play a little bit out. I mean, Wolfolk doesn't rush on third down. And when you're playing a whole nickel game, it takes away his effectiveness. And he can't get any body punches. He can't make any plays. He can't wear you down if he's not on the field.
I was so depressed about Castle after the game because that, other than maybe Mark Wilson, during the one Mark Wilson year, that might have been the worst performance of my lifetime by a Patriots quarterback. But the real reason they lost the game was because of the secondary. And
no doubt, but they
and
had
now,
to get back in.
Well, but we have Dom Capers. This guy was a head coach for like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. Didn't really distinguish himself, but this guy is now the secondary coach. We have Belichick. We have, who's the defensive coordinator?
Well, you have Dean Pease, but I think at the end of the day, Dean Pease. I think at the end of the day, it all falls on, you know, Bill. The one thing about Belichick, he takes responsibility, and I think he knows it. And the one thing I think you see with great coaches, and Belichick clearly is a great coach, is the problems that happen the week before don't happen the next week; they get fixed.
Okay, but we have all these first round picks and second round picks in this defense and allegedly the best defensive coach of his generation. And they've given up now 38 points to Miami and I think 38 last week, whatever the final score was. Like, and that's just two of the first five games of the year. So what's going on here?
Well, I think the big problem is this, you know, your two outside backers, Vrabel and Adelius Thomas, are not as good of players as they were maybe last year. I think there's some slippage in their play. There's no doubt. And when they play in a 34 alignment, they're really defensive linemen. So you're playing like a high school 5-2 defense when you're a Patriots. Mm-hmm. And people have taken advantage of it, and people have forced these guys to play in space. And look, everybody loves Teddy Bruschi, but Teddy Bruschi's not the same player as he was a while ago, and therefore, you know, it's showing up. If they didn't have Mayo, it would be a lot worse. And I think one of the things that happens to New England is because Tom's not there, they can't play with the lead. They can't use their scheme. They can't make the offense feel pressure because now if you don't make a play against them, you punt it back, you know, there's no risk that you're going to be down 7-0. But in the past when Tom was there, if you punted it back, you knew you were down 7-0, so you took more risk. People are playing the game a little bit differently, and I think that's really what shows up more. When I watch them, people play their defense a lot differently, whereas in the past, because of their offense, people were scared of how to play their defense.
And it's got to be said, the last three drafts, they haven't really done that great. And even if you go back to the Ben Watson pick, like, you know, Ben Watson, Maroney, Chad Jackson, even this guy Wheatley that got outrun by 5 yards yesterday, they haven't really gotten lucky with a lot of these picks.
No, it's been disappointing. And I think what happens to you, because they require so much intelligence on their team, their pool of selections are a little bit smaller. And I think that's what happened. And they, you know, that when they went up there, there were some really great players that were there. Some they took over, some they brought in, like Vrabel. But the one thing they need is they need those smart, intelligent player. It's a little bit like they need the guy that can handle it. And sometimes you go through some guys. Obviously, they hit with Wolfolk, they hit with Seymour, they hit with Warren. Those are good guys. And they've had some misses. And when you're picking it, and one thing we know about the draft, when you're picking at the bottom end of the draft, you're going to make a lot more mistakes than when you're picking high.
Yeah, we could have used that Spygate pick, though. I can tell you that much. I mean, that could have been Matt Forte, potentially. Who knows?
Yeah, it would have been interesting if they would have gone in that direction. Knowing Belichick, it would have been a tight end if there would have been one. Because really, to me, when I watch their team, what they really lack is a blocking tight end. The thing that I think when I watch their team, and this is going to sound completely crazy, and you're going to laugh at me, is they miss Daniel Graham's kind of player. They miss Kyle Brady was a disappointment to them.
Yeah.
And I think not having that guy really hurts this offense more than anybody.
Well, we spent two first rounders, a fourth rounder, and a third rounder, I think, on tight ends the last 6 or 7 years. It's kind of weird we don't have a tight end.
But remember, Daniel Graham was unique, and I understand why they didn't pay him, but Daniel Graham's part tight end, he's part left tackle.
Yep.
He can block. Like, if you watch Denver, he's in pass protection more than anybody. He went to Denver because they sold him that they were going to utilize him more in the pass routes and all that. And really, they should give him a 79 number because he's really a tackle. And he's really good, and he's really effective being able to control the end of the line of scrimmage. And
I
that
agree.
Makes their offense – that makes and that's what they don't have. They really need to be a running power team, but they don't have a tight end who can block.
And maybe not the type of running back to do that either. I like Sammy Morris, but I don't think he's in the class of some of these other guys. I agree with you on Graham. He was one of those guys I was so frustrated to watch because he would always drop big passes and, you know, just he didn't have great hands. But then once he got taken out of the equation, you realize like, oh yeah, this guy was like having a six-man offensive line. And I don't know if they've ever truly recovered from him leaving.
No, they thought Brady was, and I thought Kyle Brady would have been the guy. I thought Kyle Brady, but Kyle Brady was an older guy who kind of his career, you know, when they hit the wall, and he hit it last year. And I think, really, if you want to blame, not blame the Super Bowl loss, but if you want to blame why they struggled in the second half of the season offensively to the magnitude of the numbers, I think it's because they don't have that. And people don't realize, see, Tony Gonzalez isn't Tony Gonzalez without Jason Dunn.
Right.
If you don't have a blocking tight end to go along with your pass receiving tight end, you can't get them the ball. It's like the Jets with this, you know, they draft this guy in the first round. They don't have anybody can block a tight end. So Dusty Keller doesn't get the ball. It's very difficult. And when you substitute a guy on the field as just a blocking tight end or just a receiving tight end, the defense puts nickel on the field and says, who cares? So you throw the ball off. But when you have Daniel Graham out there, now they're saying, oh my God, they can run the ball on us. They can throw it. It's a little different. Not that Daniel Graham was worth the kind of money, but I could see what Denver got out of them. They got a part left tackle, and they got part tight end.
Last thing, you made your virgin inside the NFL appearance last week.
Yes.
And
great show. Great show, Phil.
You're going
Sims,
multimedia.
I mean, Phil Sims and Chris Collinsworth, I mean, you can't get better than that. I mean, Phil Sims, we tried to sign him when I was in Cleveland, and it's been, you know, those guys are great, and they're smart, and it's always fun to be around it. It was fun.
Well, I got an email from Peter King, and the subject was, I'm very threatened.
Nobody is threatened by me.
And then in the email it said, Lombardi's headlights are in my rearview mirror. I don't know what to do. Please advise.
I'm just trying to, you know, we're just trying to bring a little bit of Bill Simmons' audience over to the National Football Post. That's all we want. We just want some of the crumbs. You know, well, I've had more people say, you know, I mean, I actually got distinction in the barbershop. You know, my father's an 82-year-old barber, and I actually got distinction because I was on your podcast.
Well, I love your blog. I mean, we could call it a blog, right? It's like a report. I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It's a hybrid of a whole bunch of things, but the information is fantastic. Although I am a little jealous that all of America gets to read it now. I used to like badgering you with emails for inside info, but it's a great blog, and you update it twice a day, right? Post Diner News and then Post Tavern News.
Yep.
And it's a must read. I encourage everybody to read it. Mike Lombardi, please come back again soon.
Give my best to the sports gal. Thanks, Bill.
All right, thanks. As always, our friend Cousin Sal from Jimmy Kimmel Live, Sal Iacono. We're going to go over the lines, and he made his picks beforehand, and now I'm going to make my picks. We're going to see who wins, and the loser has to pay for the winner and a lot of his friends at this Brazilian steakhouse that we go to where you really, like, you can't go to the bathroom for 3 days afterwards, right, Sal?
That's right. Well, six for me, but, yeah, it's three for most people, and the steaks are steaks. That's how I like it.
You know it's bad when, as you're still eating, you start sweating. Like your body starts rejecting the food, and the only way they can really do it is by you just get hotter and you start sweating.
Oh, no, that's bad?
Yeah, that's bad.
All right.
That's bad.
Yeah,
it's a great place, though. What is it called? Fogo de Chão?
Fogo de Chão, yeah. And by the way, after 17 weeks of this, you're going to be able to get a free meal, I think, anyway from them, right?
Well, I don't know how many people, I mean, certainly women would not want to go here. It's a place for people who like to eat like pigs.
Yeah,
and
but
it's expensive.
There are hot girls there. Remember, we saw some good, you know, certainly not A-listers, but there was some good-looking girls there last time we went.
No, I don't remember that. I just remember sweating and not being able to go to the bathroom back there.
All right.
Let's go to week 7 lines.
Let's do it. It starts San Diego at Buffalo.
Yeah.
This is a good game. It's maybe the best game on the board, actually, early on at least.
If the Pats punch it in when it was 17-3, do we potentially win that game, or is that a blowout anyway?
Oh, I don't know. I think that was one that San Diego had to have.
Yeah.
They were just going to win that anyway.
Yeah.
So, Rivers looks solid.
We got Trent Edwards in that game.
He's supposed to come back for this one, yeah.
I'm going to say San Diego by 3.
All right, you win that one. I was way off. I had Buffalo by 2, and it's actually San Diego by 1 right now.
Okay.
So you get that one. That's a tough call. I think if San Diego wins, things are just about back to normal in the AFC, but maybe.
Hey, is that a early game or a late game?
That's early. Yeah, I'm starting with the early one.
Oh, so they see now that everybody's all fired up about this West Coast going and the East Coast playing the early game thing.
Yeah.
The numbers were kind of crazy. I mean, it was like, I forget what the exact number was, but it was something like 16 and 48 this decade. You know,
it wouldn't be
like,
that bad. They're talking about West Coast teams going to the East Coast and it being unfair because they have to play.
Right.
Or it's mostly the other way, right? East Coast teams going to West Coast and having to play 3 hours earlier, right?
No. It's West Coast playing the early game in the East Coast.
Oh, right.
Screws
okay.
them up. Which actually, for anybody who lives in the West Coast, that makes sense because whenever I go to the East Coast, the next morning I'm like a mess.
Yeah, I guess the next morning, but don't these guys arrive like Thursday afternoon or Friday? Like
I always thought they came on Friday or Saturday.
All right, well, maybe they should come Thursday, and it won't be such a problem.
I never feel right when I go to the East Coast. Like, I'm always off for the entire time I'm there. But East to West, I think, is much easier. But
all right,
anyway.
Well, maybe we consider Buffalo for that one. But New Orleans at Carolina, second game.
AFC, NFC South, just a crapshoot. I don't think there's any.
I'm becoming a fan of this division, though, I think.
Yeah. It basically comes down to who needs the game more and who's at home.
Mm-hmm.
So it's at Carolina?
At Carolina. They
and
lost.
They need the game.
They won last week. Yeah.
They need the game. Carolina by 4.
Yeah, you get that one, too. I thought it'd be higher. I thought it'd be 5. It's 3.5.
But the loan looked terrible.
He was bad, yeah.
Yeah, he was really bad in that game.
But maybe that it is weird that they are getting spanked on the road, these NFC South teams. Maybe that evens out this week. Minnesota at Chicago.
Not an NFC North team with a winning record right now.
No. All 3-3s except for the Lions who haven't won.
I think this Minnesota thing has gone past the point of no return. Once the fans start chanting for the coach to get fired, there's no going back.
Well,
I don't ever remember that turning around.
It doesn't really make sense, right, why they're so mediocre?
No, they should be good. And they have an unimaginative offense. And
Peterson still puts up triple digits every game. Their defense is solid, although I guess Jared Allen hasn't stepped up as much as they want. But still, giving up, they should be killing the Lions at home, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was an embarrassment. Jared Allen did scare the quarterback into running out of his own end zone and not realizing it, which was the highlight of the year so far.
That was great.
So, I'm going to say, it's at Chicago, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to say, kind of like the Chicago team. That was a pretty fluky loss in Atlanta. I'm going to say Chicago by 4.
All right, I hit this exact, Chicago by 3. I don't know.
So they're saying they're dead even.
Yeah, I'm not sure which team is better at this point. I do know that Matt Forte scored a touchdown every game since I traded him to you, but...
Well, Bush is scoring touchdowns. Unfortunately, they don't count in our league because they're mostly kick returns.
Well, special teams before last week. Pittsburgh at Cincinnati.
This Carson Palmer thing, it looks like he's not coming back probably.
He's not back. Parker, I think, is back for the Steelers, they're saying.
Can the Bengals really go 0-16? Like, at some point, they have to win one of these games. I don't think it's this week.
I think they're the most talented 0-16 in recent memory, but...
Yeah.
You know, on the other hand, maybe they just quit on Marvin Lewis like 14 arrests ago. Like, what's the management waiting for? Get rid of him already.
It is funny, though, when you downgrade from a good quarterback to the likes of Ryan Fitzpatrick or, dare I say, Matt Cassel.
Yeah.
It just kills your team.
Yeah. No, it's
just, when you have a guy who just can't make plays, there's just it affects every other guy on the team.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Pittsburgh by 8.
All right, I said you're going to get that. I said Pittsburgh by 7, and it's 9.5. They expect a blowout here.
That's fair.
So it's funny, though. You talk about Cassel and Fitzpatrick. Those are four all-pro receivers those guys deal with, you know, maybe from year to year. But Hushmanzada, Johnson, Welker, and Moss.
Well, did you watch the San Diego game?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
That was about as bad as it gets. Like, you know, like, it was like, watching an intramural game where somebody thinks he should be the quarterback, but he's terrible, but nobody's relieved him yet.
Yeah.
He's just throwing balls around everywhere. That was excruciating.
Well,
I don't want to talk about it.
That won't happen again. Don't worry about it.
It won't?
Tennessee at Kansas City.
Oh, that's not a good matchup for Kansas City. Coming off a bye, too. I'm going to say Tennessee by 12.5.
Oh, my God. I had 7.5, and it's 7.
Well, that's...
What were you like? You already got it teased down from the line you thought it would be.
Anytime I'm that off, I'm usually right with why I was that off. How does Kansas City score in that game? How do they score 3 points in that game?
I know, but let's look at it. Isn't their offense just as good as Tennessee's? I know Tennessee's defense is way better, but why do we get so excited about Tennessee's offense putting up points also?
Well, they have put up points. They just didn't do it against Baltimore.
Yeah. I don't know. And today's the deadline. We do this on Tuesday. Is there anything less anticipated than the NFL trade deadline with Gonzalez and Larry Johnson being
I was thinking about that last night. Why are these teams – it's not like 20 of these teams don't need to be fixed.
Right.
Especially like when Tony Gonzalez is out there. That's somebody that could really swing somebody's offense. Guy can still catch
balls. And Larry
balls.
Johnson they talk about. Like our fantasy football trade deadline is 10 times more exciting than the actual trade deadline.
Well, you know who's out there who I'm surprised hasn't been mentioned is Bolden.
Yeah.
Because Steve Breston came right in, and really there's been no drop-off for them, and he's going to leave at the end of the year as a free agent anyway. So you would think a team that needs to roll the dice like Tennessee and really get somebody who could, you know, a big play guy could push them over the top, that would be something that made sense.
I wonder if Bolden's more banged up than they thought. They had shots of him on the sideline that horrible Cowboys game I watched.
That's what you remember in our league 2 weeks ago. I picked up Breston, and even though they only said Bolden was going to be out 1 week, just – watching that clip, it didn't seem like he'd be out 1 week with that hit.
Yeah, he might be gun shy for who knows how long.
Yeah, and then on top of that, you get that sinus fracture. That you break, like, what did he break? His sinus?
Yeah.
I forget what it was.
Showing him on the sideline, he really looked like a cartoon character, the way his head was misshapen and everything.
Yeah, I mean, what happened to him was almost like being in a car accident. I just don't see somebody coming back in 2 weeks from that. I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see him again until like week 10 or 11.
That's why they can't trade him.
Yeah.
Baltimore at Miami.
So we think Miami might be good. It might be a solid team.
Yeah.
It's a pretty fluky loss last week. The Andre Johnson catch was like the Dave Roberts deal.
Oh, God. That drive stalled like 3 times.
I know.
They needed like two rulings turned over to keep that drive going.
Yeah, that was about as... There was a couple really tough losses. Not as tough as when Sage Rosenfels just killed the Texans that week, but just losses where the team just kind of left the field saying, how do we not win that game?
Barely.
That was definitely one of them.
Yep.
I think Miami's better than Baltimore. I don't know if the line will reflect this stuff, so I'm going to say Miami by 1.5.
Oh, I said 1 and it's 3. So
ooh.
It's now 4-2 your lead. Although you were off by 5.5 points at that Chiefs game, but I don't know, man. The whole league is upset with John Harbaugh for you know, the Colts were just about to go away forever and the Ravens get spanked in Indy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know what? We missed. I actually changed my pick after I did my column with the Ravens Colts because the more I was thinking about it, Joe Flacco on the road.
Yeah.
I mean, before going into that game, he had 1 TD and 4 interceptions. Now he's
right,
got 1 TD.
He went to Pittsburgh and didn't embarrass himself too much. And
right, but then he self-destructed, remember?
I guess the Colts just couldn't lose that game at home.
No, that meant too much. I'm mad that I didn't pick it in my column. But now he's got 1 TD and 7 interceptions.
Yeah.
And Miami's defense actually makes some plays. I think Miami's a nice pick in that one.
San Fran at the Giants.
Ooh, I wouldn't want to play the Giants this week. Not after last night.
Maybe not as gutty, though, as everyone thought, right?
Well, I think now it turns out we all might have collectively gotten a little too excited about the NFC East.
Yeah,
I blame myself.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, and we haven't gotten into the Tony Romo thing yet. It's lousy.
Right.
But, you know, the Giants lose to the woeful Browns. The Redskins lose to the more woeful Rams.
Yeah.
And all we're going to hear about is Tony Romo and the Cowboys and how they're done this week.
But, yeah. Well, then you look back at the Giants, and you know, they beat the Redskins, but it wasn't like a blowout or anything. And then they just played a couple bad teams, and then everybody
was
convinced.
They beat the Bengals by 3.
Yeah. And everybody was convinced they were by far the best team, and then that Browns game was a disgrace.
That said, this week may be a good spot to take them.
Yeah, who's the – so it's the Niners in
San Fran.
And San Fran might have the worst defense in football.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Giants by 13.5.
I get this because I said 9 and it's 10.5.
All right, that's too low.
But dare I say, three-team teaser. I know you hate them, but let's just keep this one in mind. We like the Giants, right? Mm. Maybe there's two others.
Well, hey, wait a second. Is that early or late?
That's early still.
Oh, another one. So you got two West Coast early games this week.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Like it. Mm.
But the Giants have the short week. I wonder if that factors into this crazy stat.
Mm.
Dallas at St. Louis. Now here's what we'll do. I guess we'll go by the post-injury update line,
yes.
Right?
Yes,
It opened at 10.5, and I thought it would be 10.5. But now since, let's go with the Brad Johnson line.
I think that's only fair.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to say 6.5.
Wow, that's what I said, and it's 7.
Am I the only one who doesn't think that the Brad Johnson drop-off is, like, that much of a catastrophe?
I think for this month, and, like, look, you're a sports writer, and I understand it's hard to avoid hyperbole, and especially when Peter King's writing a column at 5 in the morning, but this couldn't have happened at a worse time. Really, this couldn't have happened at a worse time. How about down 10-0 in the first quarter to Chargers in the Super Bowl? Tony Romo breaks his pinky. Couldn't have happened at a worse time with the Rams and the Bucks at home and then a bye on the schedule.
I thought it was a pretty good time.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, this, if I had to pick a week, I'd be like, right after the Cardinals game would be good.
Right heading into the Rams.
Yeah.
Do you think that his injury explained why he so passively celebrated the game-tying field goal? I thought that was one of the weirdest reactions I've ever seen in football.
Unless he could foresee it. It happened in overtime, the injury. The first play overtime.
Oh, it did? Well, why didn't he react to the game-tying field goal?
I don't know. I think
they showed him, and he was just kind of sitting there like he was waiting for a check at a restaurant.
I know. Now he's got a
It's a weird team. You root for a weird team. I don't like the chemistry at all. I'm gonna say it. I don't think they can win with that chemistry, with all the weird stuff happening.
Garrett knows what he's doing, really. Like, he's got a bunch of studs on offense, and every game the plan is different. Except that now everyone's frustrating Terrell Owens. Like, they know it becomes like a pro wrestling thing where you frustrate Terrell Owens and he doesn't get a reception or thrown to in the first quarter, and then you could guarantee there'll be shots of him flipping out on the sidelines, and all of a sudden you're in their head and it's a different game. So,
well, here's my thing. I think that this Johnson injury is actually a good thing for Dallas because it limits a little what they can do.
Yeah.
And now they're going to do what they should have done all along, which was pound the football.
Right.
And then throw when the other team starts stacking the line. It seemed to me like they were too anxious to get T.O. involved, and maybe they don't need to. I think Barber is the meal ticket on that team.
If T.O. didn't throw tantrums on the sideline every time he didn't get the ball in the first half, I would say you're right. But
I think they're all afraid of him. I really do. I think he affects everybody on that team with the stuff that he does, and they're like, oh, man, I don't want to deal with T.O. Just throw him the ball. Yeah. And then it gets them out of what they do.
It's a mess. But I really do think we could. I mean, having teams beat the Rams by just running the ball, it seems like we should be able to do that.
Well, especially when you have the Barber Jones combo.
Yeah.
It's like
Jones, I think,
well, now
he's
hurt.
It's a couple weeks now.
Yeah, I just don't like the way that they ran their offense.
I'm worried about this coach. I mean, Wade Phillips is so due to outcoach somebody, and I know Jim Haslett. That's a tall order, but please get it done. All right, late afternoon games now. Detroit at Houston. 0-5 versus 1-4.
I still like this Houston team, even though I pick them every week and they screw me. I think Houston busts out with this one. I think this is a big win for them. I'm going to say Houston by 6.5.
All right, you're closer. I was way off. I said 4.5. It's actually 9.
That's the Darren, what's his name, Darren Orlovsky?
Yeah, for Detroit, if he even starts again, I don't know.
Yeah.
That's all right, but remember our three-team teaser thing. We like Houston, we like the Giants for now.
There's been some fantasy QBs that just destroyed owners this year. Because I was looking at our friend Elliot in our league, and his first two QB picks were Carson Palmer and John Kitna.
Seemed okay, right?
And then in the second to last round, he took Matt Ryan, which just seemed like a, you know, just an awful pick, even for the end of the draft, and now Matt Ryan's his best guy by far.
Yeah. And by the way, the guy who has Romo is in my other league is killing me to get Chad Pennington. So how does that work?
Really? And Chad Pennington's a free agent in our West Coast league.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, the Romo thing. Yep. Hey, you know what's really sad is when Romo got hurt, I immediately thought of all the fantasy implications because I have him in my East Coast League. Then I was thinking about the guy in our West Coast League who's winning it and what's he going to do. And after like 10 minutes, I was like, oh, yeah, this also affects the NFL. it's kind of
you know,
sad.
It also affects, which is the saddest of all. Now Jessica Simpson can only count to 19. Oh, that's a good freaking joke. I don't care what you say. That's a good joke.
That was good. I did all like right. it.
All right, Indy at Green Bay.
Ooh, I don't know what to make of these two teams.
They were done, right? Didn't we write them off, the Colts? Now they're
well, now they all of a sudden their offensive line got healthy, and Marvin Harrison is kind of Marvin Harrison again. How did that happen? I thought he was done. Manning's moving around a little better. They can't run the ball, though.
Well, should we go by what the line opened to? Because it moved 2 points. I think let's go by what it opened.
Well, we always do what it opened.
Yeah, right.
I think it opened as Indy by one, and now it's Indy by three.
Wow. All right. You hit it exact. I thought Green Bay would be favored by two, but everybody in Vegas included is back on the bandwagon. It opened at Indy by one, like you said, but now Green Bay is giving one. So
Now Green Bay's giving one?
Green Bay's favored by one, last I checked.
So did I win that one, or did you win? Oh, no,
I hit that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You won. It was plus one.
Huh. Green Bay's giving one. That's weird.
See, now everyone likes the Colts. It's amazing how fast.
Yeah.
7-4, right. You're up. Jets at Oakland.
I might have hit this Jets sleeper pick, although they weren't totally a sleeper, but they're 3-2. Somehow they're 3-2. It just seems improbable, but they're 3-2 with a bunch of easy games.
Yeah, but I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah.
The Raiders win this game, dog.
Really?
I think so. I think the Raiders win. Well, go ahead. Pick a line and see if...
Does Jamarcus Russell, are you nervous that he hasn't made a good play in the entire season?
Oh, of course I'm nervous, but this is what the heck happened to Favre is what we say after this game.
Yeah, it does have the makings of like one of those old school four-interception Favre performances.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Jets by six.
All right. See, I said Jets by five. Jets by only three.
All right.
So they're begging you to take the Jets, and that's a losing play, I think.
I'm not going to pick, what's his name, Tom Cable?
Yeah.
I'm going to keep going against Tom.
You don't like him?
Yeah, I don't think Tom now with the career record of 11-36 as a head coach. I'm going to keep going against him.
Also, minus 2,400 that Chris Berman brings up the Heidi Bowl.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You think there's a chance? Cleveland at the Redskins.
Hey, you know, I'd like to apologize for the Skins as being part of the media for pumping them up. Clinton Portis was upset at us.
Yeah.
I don't believe in this Cleveland team. I think that was just a classic fluky Monday night game. Yeah, I'm going to say.
It might be, but that team is better than the Redskins, the one we saw last night, but it might be a fight.
Right. Well, you know what they did last night, which they didn't normally do, was throw deep. As you know, having Braylon Edwards on one of your teams.
Yeah.
They took a couple chances deep, and maybe that's what they need to start doing. Or I don't know why they didn't do it all along. But.
And also, first play from scrimmage, Jamal Lewis gained 7 yards on the ground. Like he's run down. It's like, all right, what's going on here? That's nice.
Right.
There's something's wrong.
I'd say Lewis looked good last night.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm going to trade him, it's this week, because he looked pretty good in that game.
Yeah.
So it's Cleveland at
the Skins.
I'm going to say Skins. By eight.
I get it. I said 7.5. It's seven.
I was going to say 7.5.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Counting ties. It's 7-6. Counting ties. You're up.
Okay.
Two left. And you will for sure. Yeah, you know what? You're going to win both of these. And this is a Sunday night game. Seattle at Tampa Bay. And, by the way, I don't know how Roger Goodell is going to come down on the Pac-Man Jones thing, but... This is what he should be looking at, the flex thing where they could swap out the Sunday night thing.
Yeah.
We haven't hit that yet, right? They're not allowed to change that until week 10, is it?
Right. Nobody wants to see Chaz Fry on Sunday night.
This is terrible. If the Red Sox make game 7, this will 40,000 people will watch this game on their TVs.
So it's Seattle and Tampa Bay. That's suddenly rejuvenated Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Tampa Bay by 8 points.
All right, that's pretty solid guess. I was off 6 points on this. It's Tampa Tampa by 10.5.
Yeah, Chaz Fry. I mean, he was really bad in that game. I can't blame the
All right, but who blows this three-team teaser? Tampa just to beat Seattle, Houston just to beat Detroit, and the Giants just to beat the 49ers, all at home.
Houston probably blows it because you've put too much pressure on them.
What about, would you replace them with Pittsburgh just to beat Cincinnati?
I would. I think that would be the move.
That's not a bad team.
Don't do three-teamers, though. We go through this every year.
I know, but this is the first week I looked at... I know, believe me, I was off it for like 3 weeks, and now it just these jumped out of me. All right, Denver at your team, New England.
Oh, God. Well, it's a good, terrible defense for Matt Castle to go against. Mm-hmm. I'm worried about this game only because I think the fans were so repulsed by last Sunday that they might start booing him if he stinks.
Well, what about Moss has given up again? I thought he was going to try. Now he's given up?
Moss was wide open three different times for huge plays and dropped one of them, and then the other two he would have had touchdowns and the guy didn't get it to him.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I just think going from Brady to Castle, if you're Moss and you're kind of weird anyway, that's got to be, like, traumatic. He probably needs to, like, be in therapy.
See, I would look at it the other way. I'd be like, you know what? Screw this Brady talk. I'm going to show everybody that I'm the best player on this team. I can catch a ball from the ball boy, you know?
All right, let me ask you this. Let's say Jimmy goes out for the year with a torn ACL.
Right.
And Josh Gardner replaces him as the host. After, like, 2 weeks, are you trying as hard on writing your jokes? Or do you say, oh, my God, we're screwed?
I don't know. How familiar are your fans with Josh Gardner?
I don't know. He was the first name that came to my head. How about we go, like, Carrot Top.
Carrot Top?
Yeah, Carrot Top is now the host of Jimmy Kimmel Live for 9 months.
Well, I think the league, ABC, would cancel us before I even decided to give up.
Well, that's where the Patriots are at. They would be canceled. No, they would be canceled if they were...
Yeah, I guess.
They would just be like, we'll retool it for 2009. That's where we're at with Matt Castle.
All right, Denver, what do you think this line is? Denver or New England?
I'm going to say it's New England by 3.
Wow, you hit it exact. And you won the week, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 to 6 or something.
All right.
Now it's 3-3-1 is our Fogo de Chao meat bet.
Hey, one last thing. We went to a wedding this weekend in Austin, Texas, for our friend Daniel Callison. A
lot of fun, yeah.
Huge Red Sox fan. Schedules the wedding on the Saturday of the second round of the baseball playoffs.
Right.
And
not to mention the big, we were in Austin, like you said, big Texas, Oklahoma also that day.
Yeah. And then got mad, claiming that he had no control over the date, which seems a little fishy since he was one of the two people getting married and he paid for it.
Yeah.
But they had no control over the date. So anyway, we had the reception. The other thing is they scheduled the wedding for the exact same time as the Red Sox game, which, you know, I guess they couldn't control the time.
And then went extra innings,
And then it went extra innings, and not only that, it was an excruciating long game, but long story short, most of the wedding reception was in the bar next to the...
Well, the best part was when you and Kevin Hench, huge Red Sox fans, you're in the bar, right, for the duration of the wedding, and Daniel's father, who I think has been a Red Sox fan since 2004, he's a nice enough guy, but he's been a Red Sox fan since 2004, and Daniel's father completely blows off the sparkling lighting ceremony that they're going to do. It's the last thing that has to do with the wedding, and then everyone can do their own thing, but he won't tear away from that screen, and you and Hench even come out and give it the college try for a minute, and then go back. And then Daniel comes back and yells at his father for not getting involved. And you guys are defending his father, like, no, he was out there. And he's like, I'm sorry I wasn't out there. And you're like, no, he was like, all right, you guys better get together and figure out if he was out there or not, because this is getting weird.
We need a story. Yeah. That was it was something. You know, I kind of blame Daniel for the fact that the Red Sox are now going to lose to the Rays.
You have to. They would have won that game.
I feel like they would have won that game if we didn't spend 5 hours watching it in some random bar in some hotel in Austin, Texas, and then seeing Mike Timlin walk in.
Yeah.
And just a doom. You know, and plus they had like 5 TVs, so Timlin was on 5 different TVs at the same time, and it was it was like seeing the Grim Reaper of the 2008 Red Sox
bad
season.
Bad times. You win in 7, and you won't see it, though, because you'll be watching Tampa, Seattle.
I hope you're right.
All right.
All right, Cousin Sal. We'll see you next week.
I'll talk to you. Take care.
Bye-bye. All right, we're going to call my buddy Jacko at work, even though his beloved Yankees are not in the playoffs this year. We're going to get his take on everything that's going on. Let's see if he's in the office.
Complex Location, this is John.
Jenny!
Hey, there he is.
That's my excited high pitch, Johnny, for the fact that your Yankees aren't in the baseball playoffs, and we're calling you anyway.
Well, this is exciting and a surprising development.
So you bought an Angels hat for round one.
I did.
Didn't work out.
Then it's been thrown in the fire.
Now you're wearing the TB?
You know what? I went out and bought some Joe Maddon glasses I'm wearing. the Drew Carey black framed glasses, Buddy Holly style glasses, absolutely, with my TB hat. I've also gotten a mohawk. A Rayhawk.
Did you watch the Saturday night game saying, please bring in Mike Tomlin? Please bring in Mike Tomlin.
No, because I have, as I said many months ago when we were discussing the possibility of a Red Sox-Angels playoff, I had full faith that the Angels were going to collapse in the playoffs, and I have full faith that the Red Sox are going to come back. Being pessimistic by nature, and obviously I'm not rooting for that, but I've been down this road before. I remember 2004 all too well, and planning my game one of the World Series menu and keg choices, which never came to fruition. So I didn't really watch much of Saturday night's game. I saw that they had a lead, and then I was happy to. I flipped around. I mean, I caught bits and pieces of the score, but I wasn't awake at whatever hour of the morning for Mike Timlin's performance. Had I known he was coming in, I would have been happy, certainly. But
well, the Grim Reaper costume threw everybody off when he came in with that and then took it off. But I'm much more concerned than you no Manny, no Mike Lowell. Ortiz is just a shell of himself right now.
Manny would have really helped him in the lineup, don't you think?
Yeah.
Probably would have improved some things.
Yeah, it's just really tough to score when your 3-4-5 isn't as reliable as it was during the 2 years that you won the World Series.
No, it's
bad times.
True. And the Rays are scrappy, I'll tell you. You know,
they're a little frisky.
Tell you, not bad. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with for years to come, unfortunately.
Well, when you pick in the top three every year for 40 straight years, it's going to pay off eventually.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I said. When you have the number one pick for 10 straight years, you can't help but be good, unless you're Matt Millen.
You missed on Friday and Saturday games, Fridays and Saturdays games, the number of Rays fans who were folding their brand new TB hats, folding the bill as the game went along was in the high thousands.
Yeah, that's the biggest joke ever. I used to think the biggest joke in sports, and it was at the time, was the 1995 Mariners when they made the playoffs.
Oh, this 97?
No, in 95, the first year of the wild card.
Oh, yeah, the Mariners.
The Mariners, right.
Yeah.
And people literally were like, which one's Edgar Martinez again? You know, in the stands waving with their stupid moose, waving their white towels.
Yeah.
But the Rays have surpassed that. I mean, the fact that there's all these hidden Rays fans is an absolute abomination. It's such a joke.
Well, I can vouch firsthand. I was there August 2007, the end of August, and it was an experience unlike anything I've ever had. There's nobody there, and out of the people who were there, half were Red Sox fans. And, you know, it's...
I mean, when they played the Yankees for the past 10 years, it's like 75% Yankee fans because the Yankees have their spring training facility there. So everybody's a Yankees fan. I mean, it's like a Yankees home game.
Well, that might explain why so many fans were rooting so passionately against the Red Sox in the first two games.
It could be, they're used to doing that. Yeah, it could be Yankee fans embittered and with no playoffs to root for that went out and bought their Evan Longoria jersey.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be a lot more Red Sox fans there, and the actual number was probably like 9 or 10%, I would say.
But really? That low?
Yeah, it was pretty low. I was shocked. I thought it was going to be 25%. Then I had people who lived there tell me it was going to be like 40%, and it wasn't even close.
Wow.
I don't want to totally target the Tampa fans because at least they showed up. Like these Dodger fans the last two games, just pathetic. I mean, they didn't even sell out either game. And even yesterday, they're down two runs, and Manny's coming up, and people are leaving. Like, so I'm so for Philly in this series now. They have great fans, long-suffering fans who give a crap, and they would never have left a game like that. I can't root for the Dodgers.
I mean, in all seriousness, I'm obviously rooting for whoever plays the Red Sox, but I've really been kind of pulling for the Dodgers just because of Torrey.
Yeah.
And because of Manny. I think it would have been comedy to see Manny win a World Series with somebody else. But really now I've kind of turned myself because you think about Philadelphia, they haven't had a championship since, what, like the 83 Sixers?
It's great, yeah.
So really, Philadelphia, like, is in desperate need of a championship. Like, they just need one so badly. So I mean, you know, if I have to, I'm going to root for them now, I think, to say, like, Philly needs a championship. Plus, the rioting would be exciting. 25 years of pent-up rage and bitterness just coming out would be good.
It would be a word that surpasses rioting, whatever a worse word than that is. Wouldn't it be like a joyous rioting?
No,
people
really
happily would. Flipping over cars.
It would be a relieved rioting.
Well, did you watch Game 4 last night?
I did. I watched a good portion of yesterday. Once I saw they were losing 5-0, I tuned in with glee, yes.
That was a great baseball game.
Oh, the
I'm talking about Dodgers. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I flipped between that and the football game. I caught snippets of it.
The Matt Stairs moment was a legitimately great moment. The Matt Stairs homer. Like, very exciting. Like, a signature baseball moment, I thought.
My buddy Ryan, the Canadian that we've briefly referenced before, was a Olympic teammate of Matt Stairs. Or World Baseball Classic teammate of Matt Stairs, yeah.
Wow.
So he said he's really one of the all-time good guys, so it's good to see him succeed in a big moment.
It was the last thing I remembered from the game, because after he did it, Joe Buck mentioned that Matt Stairs had something like 257 career homers, and I passed out. It's like, what?
Really?
So I woke up an hour and a half later, the game was over, and I looked it up on baseballreference.com, and Matt Stairs has 257 career home runs.
That's crazy. That's wild.
I wouldn't have guessed like over 80.
Yeah, well, he's played for every team in the league, basically, and he's just like an old, it looks like a softball player, you know, so.
257 home runs.
He's a compiler. He's compiled some home runs, you know, along the way.
Unbelievable.
Pretty
that was
good.
A great trade. I mean, I remember when they made that trade thinking that's exactly the type of guy that would come in a playoff game off the bench and maybe do something, and how the Red Sox really didn't have anybody like that.
You know what I was thinking is that when he got traded from the Blue Jays, there goes my chance to make one last trip to Yankee Stadium with some free tickets for Matt Stairs. That's what I was thinking when that trade was made.
Now he's a World Series hero.
Now he's a potential World Series hero, yeah. So that's
you should ask your friend Ryan for Matt to give him some clothing from last night's game instead of sending it to Cooperstown.
That's right. His spikes in his hat and shirt, whatever, right?
I obviously, neither of us really watched the National League. I just don't have time. And I also thought it was an inferior league. But I've watched a lot of the Dodgers because of Manny. And it's a great story. And it's just, I like their home games. I don't know. There's an energy about them that I enjoy. But I've been really impressed by Philly. I say it's a good team and it's resilient, and this Brad Lidge, he just doesn't ever blow anything.
Yeah, that's a problem, because he's probably due to blow one in a big spot here, wouldn't you say?
These things
can't go on forever with not blowing it. I mean, he tried hard in game one of the Cubs series.
And that's every Philly fan's biggest fear, I think.
Yeah, he's going to have to blow one sooner or later.
Well, that he blows one, but then has those Pujols warlike flashbacks to the Pujols homer.
Whoever they play in the World Series should have Pujols throw out the first pitch in game one.
That's a great idea.
The ultimate vengeance, like here's Albert throwing out the first pitch, he can wave out to the Philly bullpen.
Welcome to Fenway Park. We've decided to pass on Karol Yastrzemski, recovering from heart surgery, for the first pitch. Here's Albert Pujols.
National League MVP, Albert Pujols.
And he throws it out, and they pay him like an extra $100,000 to point at Lidge and do the gun thing.
Exactly.
You're right, Lidge would never. Teams don't do that enough. Teams don't, like, use the first pitch or whatever to mess with the other team. I think it's going to be the Phillies. At the very least, they're going to be in the mix. They're clearly going to make the World Series. And, it's just going to be fascinating. Either way, it's great, because I love when the old school baseball teams are involved with the long-suffering fan bases. It's just fantastic.
It'll be exciting. And Philly's a good sports town and an embittered one, so that'll be interesting.
I think the big Red Sox ace in the hole is the fact that if you're Fox, Boston Philly is a lot more fun than Tampa Philly.
That is the ace in the hole, the understatement. Bud Selig, we used to claim in college that Jerry Sarkanian and Al Davis controlled all sports in America, which tells you how long ago it was that we went to college.
Right.
Because now Al Davis can't control anything.
Yeah, including his balance.
I was about to say that. Great minds think alike.
But, Tampa Philly.
Yeah, I mean, the Fox, Fox Sports and Bud Selig are completely going to phone that in. They're going to have, like, Tim Donahue ump one of those games, released from federal work release, to ump home plate of a Red Sox-Rays game, to make sure that the Red Sox get in there.
It's going to be Tim Donahue tomorrow, and then Leslie Nielsen in game 5.
Exactly.
That'll be
Enrico
the next
Palazzo or whatever, yeah.
I am a little worried, though, because Beckett was... I'm more than a little worried. That's an understatement. Lester looked tired. He's thrown a lot of innings. He just looks tired. Beckett, I don't know what's wrong with him. He's hurt, tired, whatever, but he can't make anybody swing and miss anymore. And now, and basically tonight the season comes down to Tim Wakefield.
Well, I don't know. It was 3-0 in 2004. Until they're dead and buried, it's like, you know, some murderous villain in a movie, you know, until Glenn Close is completely submerged underneath the water and dead and carried off. I'm not going to believe the Red Sox are done.
It's funny because before 2004, you would have said the opposite.
Exactly. 2004 changed a lot of things.
Unless the Red Sox have buried the body and have killed it, you can't say that they're not going to lose. That's
exactly
what you would have said before.
You know, speaking of your earlier topic about bad fans and LA fans, you know, I've flipped to a good portion of the end of the Red Sox game when I found out they were losing. And, you know, the diehards of Red Sox Nation, the hardcore, you know, super fans, a lot of them heading for the exits when whoever hit the home run to make it, I guess it was, who hit it, Longoria? No, Rocco Baldelli hit the home run to make it 8-1.
Yeah.
Or 8-0. A lot of heading for the exits there of the diehard fans, never say die, Red Sox Nation.
I can't blame them. It was probably cold and they were probably disgusted. I think I would have done the same.
I don't know. All we ever hear is Red Sox Nation and the passion and, you know, Tessie and long-suffering, yada, yada. Heading for the exits. See you later.
Yeah. I can't really defend it. I probably would have left, though. More out of disgust, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
To score one run against Matt Garza in seven innings. And
the Yankees haven't won a playoff game in, like, 4 years. It's all I have. Throw me a bone, would you? Let me throw the Red Sox fans under the bus, would you?
Well, if you're going to point a finger, I would say it's the booing of Jason Varitek.
Well, that's just, I mean, it's just sad what he's become, though. I mean, he's like a wax museum figure up there.
I know, but you can't boo him. I think it's, you know, you just got to kind of respect what happened in his career and respect the fact that he's cannot hit the ball in the infield anymore. It's just the way it is. He's hitting like 173 since May 22nd.
He's still got that C on his chest, though. He's the captain. It's important. The old captain. Old cap.
A lot of automatic outs in that Red Sox lineup last night in Game 3 because Varitek, Cora, Ellsbury is just a mess. Ortiz... I don't even know who he is. I feel like he's been replaced. So it's not looking good. Whatever. We had a good run.
You really have nothing to complain.
I'm not going to complain.
It's tough sports days for you. It's a couple sports days. And as much as I love you, I can't say I'm disappointed to see the Patriots get murdered.
Yeah.
And then the Red Sox lose. It's, you know.
We would do.
Those of us that hate the Boston sports scene are excited about this turn of events.
Yeah, I had one friend.
Couple years.
I had one friend who went to San Diego for the game on Sunday night, and then, you know, the Red Sox game was obviously was cruciating yesterday. He emailed this email, and he's like, I'm in hell. And so I emailed back, hey, if six titles in 6 years is hell, I'm off for hell.
Like, yeah, really.
I mean, you can't complain at this point.
Right, hell is all relative, you know.
Hey, let's talk about the important stuff. What about the island?
The island. The island is good on so many different levels. The MTV World Road Rules Challenge, because the island makes it sound like some. Wasn't there some movie called The Island or something?
I think Michael Caine was in it.
Probably.
Yeah.
But you gotta love MTV. You really have to hand it to them because they are not allowed to have food. Right. All they have is rice, and then they get like an occasional like 2 ounces of steak, and they whatever fish they catch. So they have like these meager food rations. But yeah, there's an unlimited supply of alcohol and condoms. That is fantastic.
And body oil.
And body oil. Like, whoever the producer of that is, if they didn't get a raise, there's no justice in this world. Because they're like, here's what we're going to do. We're not going to give them a lot of food, so there's going to be a lot of tension and ugliness. But we're going to have, like, cases and cases of wine that materialize there. They're shipped in. And the guy who's a Marine somehow had a full bottle of scotch, which he, of course, drank in one sitting. You know, and then condoms appear. So it's just fantastic television.
And they drop off, like, this army plane drops off, like, a box each day, and it contains, like, you know, one swordfish and 20 bottles of Patron.
Exactly.
Good luck for the next 24 hours, Real World Cast.
Exactly. And it's divided by, like, however many people there are now, like, 18 or whatever. I think they started out with, like, 18 or 20, so however many are left now. But it's really good because, it's these people that are, like, professional road rulers, no other career track in line or anything, not a lot of thinking going on, and yet they have to try and strategize. It's fantastic.
Strategize with they're hungover and haven't had a lot of food. It makes it even better.
You're right. And the guy Dunbar, who was crazy to begin with in Australia on the road, real world, now, you know, who there may be a Mitchell report in his future. He's on the thing, and he now was angry and bitter to begin with when he was in the comforts of Australia with, like, food and water.
And hates women.
He's, like, completely... Yeah. Everybody's a misogynist on that show. That's another thing to talk about. It's really set back the cause of, like, the feminist movement by, like, 25 years, I think. But that guy was, like, embittered in a good setting. So now when he's out there with no food, out in the sun, and the heat is really, like, a whole nother level. Like, really, he's like a murder waiting to happen.
I was saying last week with my wife, I was thinking, like, if he actually killed one of the female cast members and then buried her somewhere on the island and the cameras were following it, would they intervene at any time or would they just let him actually commit the murder and then bury her?
I think they'd let him go pretty far along pretty far down the road, I think, before they intervened.
I just thought it'd be funny, like, they came back from commercial and Dunbar's just digging a ditch for Kelly Ann's corpse.
Exactly.
Don't tell anybody about this. Yeah, he really, if there's ever going to be a murder on a reality TV show, he is not even the odds-on favorite. He's a level above that.
Last week when they airdropped the raw steak in, and he was like, he got the raw steak, it was a little tough to watch. Like, he was like, I thought he was going to eat the whole, like, 5 pounds by himself, raw.
Well, we were saying, like, what if he just grabbed the steak and started eating it, and they, like, had to attack him? It was like...
Lord of the Flies.
Yeah, like, Lord... That would have been fantastic. And then you have this guy, Johnny Bananas.
Yeah.
Probably one of the meanest 5 or 6 people on the planet.
He's really awful.
He's just a horrible human being and, like, just screams at these girls and just berates them.
Yeah,
just berates them for being female, basically.
His normal comeback when a girl makes a good point about, like, you know, can I help with something? And he's like, sit down, you stupid b-.
Yeah.
Right to her face. Like, where does that happen?
It's bizarre.
It's
and
really
then the
awful.
Other, the other girls. Well, the other girls don't fight back for some reason.
No, because it's really like battered women syndrome. It's not even funny. They're like really cowed by him. It's frightening.
I hate him. I think he's the reason I watch the show. And in fact, last week when Evelyn, they had the. So the whole goal of the show is there's 8 keys.
Yeah, and I don't quite understand the premise. Basically.
It's a complicated premise. It's 8 keys. And you can have 2 teams of 4, and you sail a boat to some island to get $300,000. So everybody's jockeying for the 8 keys. And this idiot, Johnny Bananas, had an alliance, but told everybody about the alliance and peed everybody else off. So then this girl, Evelyn, wins one of the challenges and has the ability to take Johnny's key, which she does. And he gave it to her. And, like, just dropped it in disgust in front of her instead of giving it to her. And then he's like, this is war. Yeah, I mean, it was really like he felt like there was going to be a murder either between him or Dunbar, one of those two.
He was really angry about it. I don't really understand, like, why he was that angry. It's not like they're going to sail to the island tomorrow. Like, his chances to get it back. Like, it was like he's out of the game now. Like, he was so bummed out. I mean, I don't quite understand the anger, really, you know, at that point. The thing I enjoy is the host, who usually was kind of, like, nondescript and, like, could have been replaced by a mannequin.
Yeah.
Professional BMX bike rider TJ Lavin or whatever.
Yeah.
He's really coming to his own this year. Now
he's
like
feisty.
A whole shtick. He's feisty. Like, he's like, I dare you to quit. Why don't you quit? Like, he's like, takes it as a personal affront if somebody, like, wants to quit because they, like, broke their ankle or something, you know?
Yeah, he verbally attacked a couple of the contestants.
Yeah, he's like, I think, you know, he really went after him. I was like, TJ, geez, what's the problem?
You know what I said? I said, TJ, great job. You killed it right there. That's his catchphrase. He's the only reality host with a catchphrase.
It is. I think MTV was like, we want you to be a little more edgy this year, TJ. You know, we want you to, like, really bring it to the contestants.
Either that or they're not feeding him like they're not feeding the other contestants.
He's on the same diet without the wine and the condoms, yeah.
The other thing that's great about the show is the amount of silicone implants on this island.
Yeah.
They broke some sort of record for remote island versus silicone. Silicone. Silicone?
Silicone. Silicone.
Yeah, they've broken the ratio record. There's just fake ones everywhere.
It's too bad they couldn't somehow turn that into food or energy somehow. like oil, you know?
Well, maybe when Dunbar kills the first female, maybe he'll figure out a way to drink their implants. If it's saline, he could probably, that gives him a little boost.
The thing I don't really understand is the alliance seems to be made up of like 4 people. Yeah, there's 18 people on the island. Like, why don't the other 14 ever get together and talk and say, like, maybe we should vote out some of these people that are bullying us?
Yeah.
It seems like there's there's a lot more non-Alliance members than there are actual Alliance members.
Yeah, I noticed that last week. I did the math. There was 5 people in their Alliance, but 12 people left in the show.
Yeah, like you think maybe they could get together and work out that maybe we have a bigger Alliance than you, but so far that hasn't really occurred to anybody.
Well, that was weird when Tyree got voted off.
Yeah.
He's somebody that should have maybe gotten an Alliance going.
You would think. He seems like everybody likes him, like he's an affable guy, you know, and he's a big, strong guy, you know.
I wish we'd had the whole Survivor thing when we were in college, because I think it would be really fun to, number one, have alliances, and then number two, vote people off. I feel like we could have done that on our Hall of Fame.
Oh, we absolutely would have done that. It's yet one more thing that we were screwed out of by going yeah. and being born too soon.
It's like the 79th thing. So where do you see the island heading? Other than towards a murder.
I don't know. I mean, I think the previews for the year-long one, the woman who was an anorexic and is in the Alliance, like, they showed her emotionally saying, I have to vote you off, I'm sorry. So I think the Alliance probably eventually turns on itself. I think that's probably in the script. I think the whole thing's probably scripted. So I think she probably, you know, they turn on themselves and, you know, I always miss the final episode of these things, it seems like, so I never really know who wins all the money.
I like the whole dynamic of, you know, the people who haven't been on, they're kind of in the bottom of the pecking order. They're the rookies.
Yeah.
The other people are the veterans. They're kind of proud. They carry themselves with pride. Hey, I've been on 4 of these, man.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you've been on 4 of these because you've never filled out a tax form before other than for the show.
Right.
What else are you going to do?
Right.
But then, like, that girl, Robin, who's got to be in her 30s now.
Well, that was somebody was killing her last week.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
They were like, you're almost 30 years old and you're still on this show.
Well, she said that because Robin was like, out of my way, rookie or whatever. And the other girl flipped out. You don't disrespect me and call me a rookie. It's like, really? That's you're disrespected by? And then dropped the bomb of, you're 30. You shouldn't be on this show, which hits everybody close to home.
It really does.
I
felt it myself sitting there on my couch. I'm 38. I shouldn't be watching this show.
You waited for her to turn towards the TV and say that.
That was kind of a shot at me, but how I took it.
You empathize with Robin.
I really do.
Yeah,
I'm kind of rooting for her because she's older, you know. So, yeah, I'm kind of pulling for her. So.
Yeah, I asked Matt Barry last week, what is the age where we're supposed to stop watching MTV, and he said, I don't know, I haven't gotten there yet. That's really my philosophy right now.
Good to know.
I thought it was going to be when I was twice the age of the cast members, but I'm sorry, I'm not going to find this much unintentional comedy and things to make fun of and just sheer ridiculousness out of any other TV show on any of my 700 cable channels.
Absolutely. It's good. I mean, it's just comedy. We're laughing at it, not with it. That's the important thing, you know? It's not like we're really swept up in it, like who's going to win or getting involved in chat rooms or anything about it. So I think we're okay still.
Well, speak for yourself. When Evelyn took Johnny Banana's key, I was narrating as it was going on. I was like, come on, Ev, just do it. Take the key. Ev. Yeah! Just gave one of those. My wife was like,
You were wearing your sympathetic visor, like the one that she wears on the show. You were wearing that at home, like a jersey.
I like the name Johnny Bananas, and to be honest, I'm upset that we never came up with that for you back in the day.
Could have been my 88th nickname.
Johnny Bananas has a nice ring to it, though.
It really does. I like that. It's good. It's a good one. Maybe we can work that in.
Any other TV you're watching, or is this it?
No, well, just that and Mad Men. It's like the only 2 appointment TV shows that I have.
It's a varied list.
It really is. It's
you're really two ends of the spectrum.
Highbrow to the lowest of the lowbrow, yes. Yes, sir.
I don't know what is going on with Mad Men right now.
I don't know either.
The last 2 episodes, not necessarily a bad thing.
No.
But it really, and if you haven't seen the shows, just stop listening right now.
Yeah.
Setting up the identity change for Don Draper. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't know I don't know who he called or like what was going on there, but that was fascinating.
The suitcase just showing up at the door. My mom called it after the second to last episode when it ended. Where it was the plane and the light came over him, and she sent this crazy email about he's not coming back. He's not going to come back. Identity change. Here it comes.
You think he's going to go start like a new life as Dick Whitman now or something?
Yeah, something's going to happen.
His original identity.
We thought my mom was crazy, but then looking back at that episode, the light, maybe there was something to it.
Maybe. I just assumed the thing with the suitcase was that he, you know, they talked about he lost his luggage out in L.A., and TWA shipped it to his home address or something. And then, you know, his wife is going to be like, well, where is he? Like, why did his bag come here, but where is he, you know? Mm. She tries to call him at the hotel. And I didn't understand anything that went on after he, like, left the hotel with that woman Joy and all those people that she was involved with. Like, I don't know what that was all about.
It's a weird show.
It's just like this, like, their decadent lifestyle, and he just, like, wanted to be, like, decadent and just throw it all away. And I didn't get it. I was like, what?
Last question. So you're getting married in, like, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
The redhead from Mad Men calls you between now and that 6 weeks and says, Johnny, be my man.
I would pull a Don Draper in a millisecond. And I don't think anybody could kill me for that, could they? Really? Would anybody kill me?
I just want to meet her.
Oh, man.
There was a story in the New York Post magazine that you sent me as you know, one of your routines in the morning now is you Google her every day to see if there's any news alerts. Christina Hendricks.
One of my routines is to read the New York Post online, and it was just a happy coincidence that there was a magazine about her. So in my two interests, they were able to diverge, so it was good.
And she was talking, it was kind of heartbreaking actually, talking about how she's been a little discriminated against because of her ample chest.
It's true.
And in the Emmys, she took a little bit of a beating in the blogs about, you know, her freakishly large chest.
That is a cause that I'd like to champion as well. I'd like to be their lobbyist, that group.
Well, she said an actress named Rachel Griffiths either talked to her or emailed her and said she wanted to thank her for really showing a lot of courage with her Emmys dress. And now she got dressed for some event and said, I'm wearing a Mad Men dress today and really brought those out.
Letting them loose, yeah.
So, you know, really the Jackie Robinson, maybe, of the of the large-breasted dress movement.
It's an excellent legacy. It really is.
The redhead from Mad Men. This might be, I think we're going to go back maybe to girls putting on a little weight, maybe girls eating ice cream again, maybe girls going to Johnny Rockets, not feeling guilty after.
I think this would be a good thing. This would be good for society as a whole.
Yeah, I don't mind curves.
It could make up for the mistreatment of women exhibited on a weekly basis on the islands.
And that's a good one to go out on.
There you
All
go.
Right, Johnny. We'll call you after the playoffs.
Excellent. Hey, worst of luck against Tampa Bay.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Target to sign off.
Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.